The extraordinary career and music of Italian film composer Ennio Morricone spans 6 decades and more than 500 films. Among the most remembered contributions is his score for Sergio Leone's epic 1966 film, The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. Ennio Morricone died last week at the age of 91, leaving a contribution to the cinema that is unrivaled. I'm Charles Horak, and you're listening to On Film. Joining me to discuss the life and work of Ennio Morricone, I'm happy to have back on the program Dr. Charles Leinberger, UTEP professor of music and author of Ennio Morricone's The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, a film score guide. Good morning, Charles.
Good morning, Charles.
Yes.
It's always great. It's always great to be back on your show and talk with you, although I must admit there's a certain sadness in the air among those of us who love film music.
It is. This has been a week that the world really has mourned the loss of this gigantic figure in film. It's really a passing of an era. And my condolences to you, because I know you have a personal connection to the maestro and have spent some time with him. We'll get to that in a minute. But I was thinking, just a few weeks ago, I had watched the Dollar Trilogy as part of my COVID retreat. All three of the films that kicked off the career of Clint Eastwood that Sergio Leone directed, so-called spaghetti westerns, all of which Ennio Morricone scored. And I think we heard a little bit of that music leading into the program today. But it strikes me over the years that I know so many people that know that music but have not seen the film. And with over 500 titles that he worked on, I thought we might broaden out from The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, which was made in 1966. Do you have some favorite titles?
Oh, gosh, I have so many favorite titles. But I have to reply to your comment. You know, I had heard, and I was familiar with this music, but I had not really seen these spaghetti westerns, the Dollars trilogy, in its entirety.
So you were one of those people.
Yeah, until I took a graduate class at the University of Arizona on the films of Clint Eastwood.
Mm.
And that's when I really just embraced the uniqueness of, and not just the music, but the whole Italian Western genre with its vivid landscapes and colorful personalities and over-exaggerated sounds.
Right, and just mythic storytelling, particularly by the time you get to the sprawling epic that is The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, the third film in the trilogy. And I gather that both Morricone and Leone had been schoolmates or classmates, and they knew each other from the early days of their lives.
The story goes that they were in elementary school together and then went their separate ways. And then years later, they ended up reconnecting to make these films, and they didn't realize until they saw each other in person that, hey, aren't you that kid from school?
You know, with composers with a filmography quite like this and of the age that Ennio Morricone was, 91 when he passed away last week, we often hear of the passing of these iconic film personalities and we think back to their films, and we really haven't heard from them for a few decades. That was not the case with Morricone. He had a prodigious output right up to the very end, still working in 2020.
Right up to the end. He had a unique work ethic among even among composers, who I know are hardworking people, no doubt about it. But he would get up early and work, and he always experimented. He never adopted the philosophy of don't mess with success. He was always willing to try something new and different and innovative. You know, when we think of his style, we think of the Italian Westerns, but he had so many different styles over the years. Good contrast would be the Italian films for Giuseppe Tornatore, like Cinema Paradiso and Melena, that have these beautiful, lush orchestral string melodies. And
so very romantic.
Yeah, and his music for some Hollywood films in the 1990s that have these complex, dissonant, somewhat atonal scores. He was always willing to stick his neck out and do something experimental because, well, he could get away with it. He had enough confidence in his own ability and his reputation that people would want him to compose for their films, knowing that he may be experimental.
Yeah, I was thinking of, you know, one of my favorite early horror films, The Thing. I was a big John Carpenter fan. And if people know the work of the director, John Carpenter, they know that he wrote his films and scored his own films, with the exception of his greatest film, The Thing, in which he got Ennio Morricone to score, and who somehow he understood where Carpenter was coming from, because it's a very Carpenter-esque score, but he takes it to 11. He just completely inhabits sort of the style that Carpenter himself would elaborate, but does it so much better than Carpenter himself.
I haven't seen that movie in a very long time.
Well, you can hear strains of it. He samples some of it in one of his later scores, which is Tarantino's The Hateful Eight from just a few years ago, which has similar themes to The Thing. And Ennio Morricone brings back some of that. But I'm glad you said the word innovative, because I was watching The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly a few weeks back, and I was thinking particularly about the music, not knowing that we would soon not have this composer with us. But I was thinking that film is still so fresh and modern, partially because of the music. It does not feel like a film from 1966, and it feels like no other film really of its time or since. There was something so unique about Ennio Morricone and the way he approached sound for film. And I'm wondering, as you got to meet the maestro and you got to, in researching your own book, did you have time to talk to him about what made him tick versus so many other composers?
I wouldn't say I could tell you what makes him tick. I know that he wasn't fond of being compared to other composers or following the example of other composers.
Which you really can't.
Because he was really a lone wolf when it comes to that. But what strikes me, especially when he first became popular with these three Leone Westerns, is at the time, American audiences were used to the Hollywood films, films with music by Dmitri Tiomkin and Elmer Bernstein and Max Steiner, that wrote for very much a 19th century orchestra in major and minor keys. And along comes this Italian composer with a pop music background, but also a conservatory education, who does just the opposite in so many ways. So think of the Hollywood Western sound as our thesis, and think of Morricone's scores as the antithesis. And over time, you know, the Hollywood sounds scores became sounding more like him, and his scores maybe a little bit sounded a little more Hollywood, and that became our synthesis, where now when you hear a Western, you can't tell if it's Italian or Hollywood, because they've all kind of assimilated so many of these unique sounds over the years. But what's so amazing is not just his ability to write wonderful melodies, and not just his abilities to experiment with compositional techniques, but his choice of instruments. Who the 1960s would put an electric guitar in a Western that takes place in the 1860s or 1870s? If it's such an anachronism, no one in the right mind would do it, but he did it. And it worked, and now other people imitate it.
Yes, I'm thinking of several cues in Once Upon a Time in the West, another great Western he did. And the director of that film, also Sergio Leone, using Henry Fonda in the bad guy role, sort of a counter to what we think of as well, along with the music. You mentioned all the music and the expansiveness of the range of things he wrote for. And I just think, you know, he has these full orchestral scores. He has the electric guitar sometimes. He has voices and sounds from human beings on the scores. He has whistling sometimes, or you know, it's just amazing the sonic pluralism that he was able to marshal, and I guess always to the benefit of the film.
Yeah, there was no limit. I mean, he didn't restrict his choice of instruments to any particular genre, any particular time period, any particular culture. And what was remarkable was, and he insisted upon this on all of his films, that you'll always see the words music composed, orchestrated, and conducted by. Unlike most Hollywood composers and other composers around the world, he never handed off his music to someone else to orchestrate.
He saw it all the way to the end. That's fascinating. I noticed that on the Dollar Trilogy, but I've not paid attention in the newer ones. I was also thinking of a film from also from the 60s I've been meaning to revisit, and now with his passing, I definitely want to, called Danger Diabolic, which is kind of this Italian sci-fi, James Bondy, modish, very modern film that he wrote a very jazzy mod score for, which we don't think of him doing, but just the range of this man. You were, as I mentioned earlier, you were fortunate enough to go and do some research in Italy and actually meet Ennio, I guess, in Rome at his house.
Yes.
Can you tell us any more about that exchange and maybe some personal takeaways from that?
It was a wonderful experience. My wife went with me to Rome. I had been studying Italian before the trip. And when I got there, I took an interpreter. Obviously, I didn't trust my own Italian to something this important. And the funny thing is, we were my wife and I were staying at a bed and breakfast run by the Sisters of Notre Dame. My sister's a member of the order. So my interpreter was actually a nun named Sister Sarah, which he found incredibly amusing. he only spoke Italian throughout the interview, and she was my interpreter. And he was informative. He was wonderful to be around, although he wasn't 100% forthcoming with like some of the technical questions I was asking him about his compositional technique. And I can understand that.
Because he was trying to keep the secret sauce and recipe to himself, or?
Very much so. Yeah. His words, as translated by Sister Sarah, was something like, well, if I tell you about it, you'll write about it, and other people will imitate it. And I don't want that.
Right, because not only was he uninterested in emulating anyone else, he probably understood that other people were wanting to emulate him.
Exactly.
And that would somehow dilute him.
That makes sense. I mean, he worked so hard to be unique that he didn't want imitators.
When you were with him, or maybe in your research, do you think that simply growing up in Italy and the sort of rich history of music in Italy, from the opera to the classical to the street music, did he ever talk about how that influenced or might have influenced him?
Not when I met with him, although there's been other works, other interviews with him that have been published in recent years that do touch upon that. And these Italian Westerns have been described by many people as very operatic,
yes,
because they are so theatrical and over the top. But he brought so much to the table. His conservatory training that taught him all the modern compositional techniques of the mid-20th century, his background in the pop music. He was an arranger and producer for RCA Records in Italy. So he just brought so much to the table that no one else could have ended up composing the way he did. It was just too unique.
I know this summer you're still teaching online there at UTEP some students in film music. With the passing of Morricone, I'm sure there's been conversation in your class. Were your students aware of him before this?
Well, it's an online class, but it's not a synchronous class. I'm not actually meeting with students face-to-face. So we are getting to the point. I just uploaded for tomorrow's class some lectures in which I do mention him, because sometimes when I want to teach a topic in that class, some of the best examples are from Sergio Leone and Ennio Morricone, whether it's the way the sound effects are used or the film editing and how the visual editing coincides with something ironic or humorous in the sound or in the music. So we definitely incorporate Morricone and Leone films throughout the class.
I think it's hard to really contextualize what a titanic figure he was in film music and contribution to cinema. I was thinking last week when the news came that, you know, probably for most people who are not cinephiles, who, you know, enjoy movies, but they don't study film, they probably know one composer, John Williams, who's had a prodigious career as well, who's, I think, 3 years younger than Morricone, but has scored just 1/4 of the films. I mean, that puts in context both the breadth of his career, but the incredible output. Are there any other film composers you can think of that approach the kind of output that Morricone had?
The only other one I could think of would be Max Steiner, who scored hundreds of films for RKO and Warner Brothers and a few other studios over the years.
Yeah, and with Morricone, or with those golden age composers, you know, you look at his filmography and he was routinely doing 10, 15 films per year, every year.
Right. Which creates the illusion that he can work really fast and turn out a film score. But very often he would write much more music than he needed for a film and keep this leftover music in case he needed it in the future.
I see.
And which actually was a very efficient use of time.
Of course. So he often just wrote what came to him and then filed it away, if you will, till the right image came along that spoke to him.
Yeah, exactly.
Fascinating. Before I let you go, I was thinking back the last few days about him and some of my favorite films that he scored. And whether it's the Dollar Trilogy or some of the horror films, science fiction films I've seen, oftentimes in his films where they are, what makes them so effective is they often have his music combined with image for long stretches without dialogue, where the music is the sound that accompanies the music solely. And there is usually a rhythm to some of those cuts and a pacing that is so pure. I'm wondering if you've found that too, that he was drawn to pacing and really understood cinematic pacing.
Yes. So many of my friends, my colleagues who study film music, we all kind of agree that The Ecstasy of Gold from The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly is one of the most exquisite examples of, of the melding of the music and the visual image. And it's not Mickey Mousing. It's not like Max Steiner and someone walking up the steps and the music matches their steps. It's on a different level than that. It's so hard to explain, but it's brilliant. And I remember the first time I really saw that scene, and I was just completely captivated.
Yeah, and this,
and I actually ended up writing and presenting some research at some conferences on that particular example.
And to put it in the minds of listeners who know The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, it accompanies the final shootout where you have this trio, this triangle of shooters in this large circular center of a cemetery. And that's the music that goes with it. And it just builds and builds and builds.
Yes. And his music for those Westerns of Sergio Leone, in a scene like that, whether it's Colonel Mortimer and El Indio, or if it's The Man with No Name and Ramon Rojo, or Tuco and Angel Eyes and Blondie, there's always, during those climactic moments, that final conflict between good, which is not completely good, and bad, there's always these beautiful trumpet solos. And being a trumpet player, I love them. They are some of the most beautiful trumpet melodies ever written. And he himself was a trumpet player, too.
Of course.
You probably know that.
And that was probably the thing that drew you to him.
Well, it was just one more thing.
Well, it's certainly been a delight reminiscing about some of these favorite films. I'm going to have to go back and look at them again, and hopefully our listeners will be encouraged to, too. Charles, I want to thank you for taking time to share some of your reflection on this great, great composer.
My pleasure.
I've been discussing the life and work of famed film composer Ennio Morricone with UTEP professor Dr. Charles Lineberger. Morricone died last week at the age of 91, having written the scores to over 500 films over a career that spanned six decades, a feat that is likely to never be surpassed. You can delve deep into Morricone's iconic film score for The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly in Charles Lineberger's book of the same title on Amazon. On Film is edited by Dee Wu. For more of my conversation today about Ennio Morricone, log on to ktep.org. I'm Charles Horak. Stay safe, wear your mask, wash your hands, and thank you for listening to On Film.